Welcome to the Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmoke with you at 201-939-4513. Those are the numbers that you will dial in that specific order to give us a call and talk some Giants football. Rookie minicamp technically begins today as the players arrive. They get a little orientation, fill out some paperwork, go get poked and prodded by the medical folks. But they
all
will
the
not
good
be
stuff.
Exactly, all that fun stuff. And then they'll be back on the practice field tomorrow. We'll have coverage, of course, of all that on Giants.com. And then they'll do a little bit more on Saturday. No media availability on that day. And then everyone says adieu for the week. And then the rookies hang out. They stay, Lance, and they join the veterans. And this is an interesting couple days because it's almost like a hell week. You know, like they have in the military academies where you throw so much at these kids and you see if they can handle it.
How much
can
stick.
And then they kind of move in after that because they get a whole playbook, which is impossible to learn, put in their laps, and they say, you know what, we're going to see what you can do and see if you sink and see if you swim.
Well, what you just hit on, John, is this is more of a mental period than it is physical period. And that's what they want to see out of these rookies. They want to see, you know, who can excel in the classroom and then who is worth perhaps bringing back in to compete for a roster spot during the rest of OTAs and training camp. So I agree with you. I mean, this is more of a mental obstacle, mental hurdle, you know, who understands the X's and O's, the schematics, and then who has the potential to translate that onto the football field.
Right, and I was talking to some of the second-year players a couple days ago, and you'll see those interviews kind of pop up on the website one by one. The one with Romeo Aquara is there already. The one with Sterling Shepard's there already. And each guy said the same thing. And it's exactly what you just said. It's a mental test. It's the coaches seeing how you process information, how quickly you can turn things around. And, you know, for the guys that got drafted, Lance, and for the guys that got, you know, a hefty undrafted free agent contract, and I'm sure the Giants will announce those names shortly, who those guys are, that this is a first impression for them. They're not fighting for their lives in these three-day periods. But there are going to be a group of guys that don't have a contract that will be here, and this is a tryout period for them. So they not only have to absorb the information, but they also have to perform on the field and make some plays to show this coaching staff and this front office staff that, you know what, I deserve to be a part of the offseason program for the next, you know, month and a half, come back in training camp and be given an opportunity to even try to earn a roster spot, because there's going to be 20, 30 guys here that are going to show up for 3 days and we're never going to see him again.
Yeah. But I think that a guy like Romeo Aquara, to use him as an example, an undrafted rookie at this time last year, wound up solidifying a roster spot, and the Giants have a track record of that, John. They've brought in a number of undrafted rookies who have actually made the team, if you go back the last few years. So, I mean, if I'm in those shoes right now, I'm saying to myself, hey, the Giants don't just overlook this period of time. They sometimes have found some unknown commodities, and they've turned them into key contributors. So, I mean, I think that's important from a mental standpoint. And I always bring this example up because I think it's important to note. At this time last year, and unfortunately Darian Thompson was sidelined last year because of injuries for the majority of the season, but if you remember, where did he start to stand out, John? Now, he was a drafted rookie. He was an undrafted rookie, but my point is he stood out vocally during rookie minicamp, and Spags talked about him and said, now we want to see when he mixes with the veterans, is he still going to have that assertiveness? And it did carry over. So that's how I think you could stand out during this period of time.
Yeah, Landon Collins did the same thing 2 years ago. They were impressed of how he kind of took charge of the during rookie minicamp and kind of led the other guys who maybe didn't have as much big-time college experience as him. And, you know, I think that's what you want to see from these guys, especially the guys that you drafted, how they assert themselves, you know, how they comport themselves on the field. And I said this to DeTino when I was with him on Tuesday. You know, the fun part of this for us is that, we, you know, we've watched these guys playing games, we've watched them on video, but you don't really get a feel for them and their personalities, how they act on the field, and really their athleticism until you see them close up in person. I think that'll be a lot of fun tomorrow.
Yeah, I think, you know, seeing them run, seeing them go through the drills and so forth without, you know, padding and anything on, but just get an idea of, okay, this is what I heard about the player, this is what his college resume is all about. Now let me see whether or not there's something that could show up close and personal.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many times, you know, you get a scouting report on a guy, whether, you know, it's the NBA draft or the NFL draft, and you've been, for lack of a better term, sold this bill of goods on this player coming out of school. Then you see him in the pro setting, you're like, this guy's completely different than what the scouting report told me he was going to be. Now, I think that happens probably more in the NBA than it happens in the NFL, but seeing these guys up close and how they act and you won't see the rookie minicamp necessarily, but in the next few weeks, how they act around other professionals, I think can paint a different picture than maybe of what you thought a guy was before he showed up.
Well, and here's another thing to take note of, John. Remember, there's a lot of players, we see this in the NFL, they're great game day, but they're not like practice type of guys. Now, I think undrafted rookies are in a different position. You really don't have an opportunity to say, I'm just going to take a practice off. But there's even some guys going back to college. When it's game day, they're a completely different player than how they perform perhaps during the course of just going through the motions during practice. So that's why I think there's only so much you can also take away from what you see on the field during this period of time. That's why I think the best thing to come out of rookie minicamp is the classroom, the conversations that the coaches are going to have with the players.
Thank you for joining us on Twitter, folks. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or your Giants mobile app. You can continue to listen there as we move forward here on Giants.com. And Lance, a couple other pieces of news that's out there. We saw Kim Jones and Art Stapleton, and I believe Ian Rappaport all tweet about it.
I think everybody in the media tweeted about it.
I think they did at this point. And obviously, not a current Giant, but former Giant Victor Cruz will meet with Tom Coughlin and the Jacksonville Jaguars. I believe May 23rd was the date that people finally settled on after kind of going back and forth a bunch of times.
Mark your calendars.
Yeah, that's in about a little under 2 weeks. Good for him. You know, he's a guy that hasn't found the job yet. He posted an Instagram video last week saying he's not retired. He's looking for a job. And Tom Coughlin knows him well. It seems like that would be a decent fit. Also, there's reports, and Art Stapleton has this. I haven't looked at the story yet, but in the tweet, there's mutual interest with the Baltimore Ravens as well for Victor Cruz's services. So I imagine he'll pick up somewhere before we get to training camp.
Well, I would think that he'd at least get an opportunity to pick up somewhere. Now, just from looking at the roster, Jacksonville is a team that has a lot of youngsters, and they're building a youth movement. I don't know how much of an opportunity there's going to be, but because of the familiarity between Tom Coughlin and Victor Cruz, it makes sense.
Maybe they want a veteran to teach these young guys.
It's possible. Yeah. I guess I'm talking about down the road to actually solidify a roster spot. Yeah. It's one thing to bring him in, mentor the young guys, but would he actually, you know, beat out some of the young guys to get a spot? And notice the trend here, John. He met with Carolina his first visit. Dave Gettleman. Tom Coughlin, that's the NFL, though. It's about relationships. That's where you turn to first. Baltimore, to me, is the most intriguing spot. And here's why. Baltimore's got a track record of bringing in veterans.
Yeah.
Anquan Boldin, Torrey Smith.
Steve Smith.
Steve Smith's another one. There's Derek Mason.
Derek
another
Mason,
guy.
That's another one.
So
another one.
Those guys they bring in after maybe they have a stint with a previous team, they've got that system, that culture established. I think that may be something to toy with there.
Yeah, Jacksonville has a pretty darn good young slot receiver in Marquise Lee who really came on end of last year, who's really kind of started his season slow. He came out in the same draft class as Odell Beckham Jr. So you're right. I'm not sure where the fit would be there. And, of course, you have the two very good outside receivers as well. And you're right, Baltimore. And Steve Smith was their slot guy last year. So
he's retired.
Did Kamar Aiken resign there, or did he end up going elsewhere? I don't remember.
You know what? That's a good question.
I'm not sure who their slot guy is in Baltimore, but you're right. I think that would make sense. And Joe Flacco, obviously, to have an experienced guy that can go
makes
to
sense.
In the slot. I do think that makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah, I like that fit because of the fact that, you know, Harbaugh's been there. They pride themselves on veterans. So, to me, that's something worth at least looking into. In terms of the other wide receivers for Baltimore, you know, they have some young guys. They still have Mike Wallace, the established veteran. Kamar Aiken's no longer on the team. And, you know, they rely on their tight ends. But now that Steve Smith's out of the picture, and with the exception of a guy like Mike Wallace, you know, Victor Cruz could come in and he can assume that slot area. And I think, you know, he could very well thrive with a guy like Flacco under center.
201-939-4513. Let's get to your calls, folks. There's no guest today, so it's me, Lance, and you. Jermaine in Jersey City. He's going to lead us off. Hi, Jermaine.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Jermaine. What's up?
How we doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm hanging in there.
That's good to hear. We're trying to hang in there, too. So what do you have for us?
My question is, I'm a Giant fan, and our linebacking core is not that good. Now, I mean, I see that LeVar Bowman for the 49ers is available. Won't we go out there and try to make a trade for him?
I mean, he's a guy that's coming off a really serious knee injury. He played a little bit last year, obviously. I'm not sure how much he has left in the tank, Lance. He was not the same guy when he played last year. And I know the Niners, I think, are probably dangling a lot of their veterans out there. You know, the rumor was out there about Carlos Hyde, and I hadn't heard the Bowman one until you just mentioned it, so it doesn't surprise me. But I'm not sure if you want to go and you know, get a guy with a reconstructed knee and give up a draft pick for the future, you know, for a guy like that.
Well, I think the best comparison is, and the rumors started to emerge today. That's why that story is now all of a sudden, you know, getting into circulation. But to get back to your point, Jermaine, I think back of John Beeson. That's the first guy that comes to mind. And the Giants, they didn't give up an overwhelming amount, but they brought in a guy who had an injury history. You know, he thrived initially, but then he couldn't remain, you know, on the field. And I look at a guy like Bowman, I think you're taking a similar risk under those circumstances.
And quite frankly, I think the Giants linebacker situation today is much better than it was when they traded for John Beeson. I have a lot more. I mean, Keenan Robinson was a full-time linebacker for the Redskins. If they need to play him on first and second down, they can. They have a second-year player in B.J. Goodson, who was a fourth-round pick in 2016 that they think can play that role as well. And Jonathan Casillas is a veteran that's been here a while. And Devon Kennard's a third-year player. So, fourth-year player. It's his fourth season. So, I don't think you need a veteran like that necessarily, Jermaine.
Okay, I understand you.
All right, all good, all right, man.
Jermaine. Appreciate the call. You know, the other part of that conversation is, and we've had this a lot of times, John, on this show, you know, how much do teams value linebackers anymore to even make a trade? You know, especially if a guy can't play in coverage.
I mean, if you're talking about a seventh-round pick, whatever, roll the dice.
Well, that's one
thing.
I
don't think that's what they're going to be looking for.
Nah, I think they want a little bit more. I mean, Bowman's got a good enough track record. He's worth certainly more than a seventh-round pick.
And he's not old. He has a knee injury, but he's not an old player.
It's
he's still in his prime years.
Correct, the durability. You talk about a player that came in 2010, and you look at his numbers, I mean, from a tackling standpoint.
What is he, 27?
He's been consistent. Let's see if he has his age up here. 28. Yeah. 8 years of experience. And he can provide pressure. I wouldn't look at him as a big sack guy over the course of his career when you look at his numbers. But once again, you know, do you want to give up assets to trade for a guy where there's durability questions? And also, you know, you mentioned this, John, when you look at the roster, there may not be a lot of established linebackers, but there's some young guys. You know, you want to see B.J. Goodson take the next step in his development. Do you want to bring in another veteran who's now going to deprive a youngster from getting on the field to develop him? That's something else you also need to ask yourself as an organization.
By the way, Salomon put up who the Ravens wide receivers are, and they could use Victor Cruz.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I got the list up here. And Kamar Aiken, by the way, went to Indianapolis. That's where he wound up.
I mean, Vince Mail is a younger wide receiver. He's a bigger guy. I mean, they don't have anybody to me that reads as a slot guy in this group. To me, that would make a lot. There's a lot of rookie and second-year guys here that don't have a lot of experience or success in the league.
I mean, Keenan Reynolds out of Navy, he could potentially play the slot. I mean, that's a young guy. Breshad Perryman is a young player who, unfortunately, has not stayed healthy.
He's an outside speed threat,
though. He's definitely an outside guy. Mm-hmm. We don't know, though, what he's going to bring to the table because of those durability question marks. We mentioned Mike Wallace, and Mike Wallace obviously has been up and down going back to his days with the Steelers. They're an offense that I look on paper right now, they rely heavily on their tight end position with Crockett Gilmore, with Dennis Pitta, who's got injury concerns of his own, and
yeah,
Max Williams.
Absolutely.
That's a tight end offense right now. They could use a wide receiver, no doubt about it.
Let's go to Charles in New Mexico. Charles, we get to hear from you twice in a couple of weeks. I feel honored. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good to hear from you.
How are we doing?
Question. I mean, I know we're going through all this, but here's a question, and you guys know more than me. I'm here in New Mexico. I surf the web all day at work. You know, tough job.
Sounds like a productive job.
Glad
right there.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Wow.
Who is our place kicker? This is an important position. Who's going to kick
some of our people
the field
upstairs.
Goal?
It's true.
You know, right now it's Aldrick Rosas, and I actually talked to him a few days ago. A story will be coming up on Giants.com next couple of days. There'll be a video interview, too. He's a big kid out of Southern Oregon. He actually has a really interesting story. Southern Oregon, if you're not aware, and I wasn't either until I did some research on it, is an NAIA school, which is basically not even part of the NCAA. It's their own separate athletic conference. It has a lot of smaller schools. It has about a 6,200 student enrollment. It plays in a conference that has a bunch of teams in, like, Montana and Wyoming and Oregon and in the Pacific Northwest. He played there 2 years. He was all-conference. He kicked, I think, 98% of his extra points. He had 116 consecutive extra point streak at one point, 27 of 32 on field goals. First-team all-conference as a kicker. He helped them win a national championship back in 2015, I want to say. And then on the final kick of that national championship game, he actually tore his ACL on a kickoff. So he missed all of last year, and then surprisingly, after spending just 2 years in school and having 2 years of eligibility left, he came out in the draft. He wasn't drafted by the Titans last season, and then he was basically without a team for most of the year. He had a couple of tryouts with the Vikings and the Cowboys at some point during the year, and then the Giants signed to a reserves futures contract in January. So he has a big leg. That's his big selling point. Whether he can be a consistent field goal kicker accuracy-wise remains to be seen. We'll have to see. I would not be surprised. And Jerry Reese certainly left the door open to them bringing in a veteran kicker when he spoke to the media around the draft time.
And they did that last year when they brought in Randy Bullock. Now, part of that was the Josh Brown suspension that triggered that, too. But they had a young guy in camp last year, and you know they waited till the preseason to see what he could do. And I think it's the same thing with Rosas. You got to see what he could do in a preseason game situation. The good news is about kickers, you know, as you went through his resume, which was quite impressive in terms of your memory, with unleashing all those facts. I got to give you a little kudos here or there.
I wrote the story yesterday.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Fresh in my
head.
Well,
I was going to say. I mean, that was a nice rundown by
you.
You know, I feel that much more substance about Rosas after this program. But anyway, getting back to the point at hand, the good thing about kickers is, you know how any time a player comes out of a small unknown school, mm-hmm. Well, how's he going to transition? You go there, you kick the ball. As long as you have a good snapper and a holder, it's not rocket science. So I don't think you need to question, well, how's he going to transition to the NFL? We'll know under preseason game
kicking
situations.
Kicking is kicking, right.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't change.
Hey, you know what? Thank you for your information. I appreciate you guys. You guys are great. You do a great job on the show. And I listen almost every day, so I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Charles.
Thanks
we
so
appreciate
much.
You
appreciate
listening.
It.
We appreciate you calling in. One funny story about Rosas, I asked him if he has experience kicking in bad weather. Because, you know, Northeast, NFC East, December, things happen. You
well,
gotta
Oregon's
kick in bad
not
weather.
The most cooperative state. But.
Well, yeah, but yeah, it's not. But he yeah. played a game in December in Montana where he said it was a -23 wind chill.
Oh, boy. All right. So he I think
said,
that answers your question.
Yes, it did. Yes. And he said it was funny. In warm-ups, he actually was, you know, had to kick warm-up field goals in warm-ups. The balls were so hard and the conditions were so
imagine.
Bad, the balls came back deflated after he kicked them. We actually, like, deflated the balls when he kicked them in the weather. So he said it was one of the most unbelievable experiences of his life. So he has kicked in bad weather.
Well, that's good. I
so
mean, that's only going to help him, yeah.
He should Settle be ready to take on that, and I think all of us can knock on wood and hope we don't have to deal with a -24-degree wind chill game in the next year or
now
so.
No, I do not think that we want to experience that. What about windy conditions? That would be interesting to find out.
He did not mention anything, the wind, but I imagine in the Pacific Northwest, there probably was a certain level of wind out there.
Because that, to me, is, right. I think, a bigger adjustment yeah. coming over to MetLife Stadium as opposed to maybe some other weather. By the way, on a side note, it's been very calm in this area the last few days in terms of the wind, and that's usually not necessarily the case. I just thought I'd throw that out. Little nugget. Normally it's very windy every single time of the day, and despite the seasonal change, it's been very calm around the Meadowlands.
It might have something to do with the barometric pressure. Have you checked that?
Well, I think that that's possibly. I haven't necessarily spent my hard-earned time looking into that. I just thought I'd throw that out.
Now,
I'm curious if you noticed that. That's
usually
all.
It's Dettino yeah. with all these weather details.
Well,
usually I come in every day.
Put me in his
he's sitting
ballpark.
In front of the facility. He has a no. big pole with like the wind sock on
I'm
the
not
top,
that
but
crazy.
He's just holding it. And he's trying to figure out how fast the wind is blowing. Is that you now?
No.
Have you taken on Dettino's role
no,
as like
I have not.
Local weatherman?
I just noticed now. Maybe this
weatherman,
as somebody with hair, can perhaps relate. But it tends to be windy around here. You know, you have to look out to whether or not the hair is going to cooperate and
now,
so forth.
In fairness,
so I noticed. Well, you know, I haven't necessarily had any headaches from a hair perspective. That's all. I just wanted to throw that out.
You put the moose in there to keep it in place, don't
no,
you?
I am not that hardcore on the moose.
Oh, you gel?
No,
up.
I am not.
Oh,
I am
you
not
are
a big
you
gel
are
guy.
Gelling?
No, I am not.
Oh yes,
I
you
am
are.
Not a big, listen,
Salamone, he's gelling.
I'm
right?
not a big gel guy.
He's gelling.
No, I am not. Listen,
he's
you guys can think whatever
gelling.
You want.
Thank
I'm
you.
Telling you, I'm not a big gel guy. I got nothing to lie about.
Now, big gel guy, do you put any gel in
no,
there?
No, I don't. I really don't.
No, no. So no product
I
at all.
I used to, but I'm not. I'm not
really
crazy about product. Yes.
So no product.
No, no product. I got nothing to
no
advertise.
No hairspray
nothing
either?
To sell.
Nothing?
No, not a hairspray guy. Never been a hairspray guy. I was a gel guy. There was a period of time.
Yeah, I know you
gel.
Were. I thought you were still gelling.
That has faded. No, I'm not gelling anymore. I mean, I'm gelling in other aspects, but not necessarily with the hair. So that was not what I meant.
I don't want to go anywhere near that.
All right, move on. Next caller. Let's go. Good transition.
Let's go to Alan in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And that's going to go on the instant replay recorder. How you doing, Alan?
Beautiful. Yes.
Hey, John. Hi, Lance.
How we doing?
Like I said yesterday, Lance, this healthy competition you guys are going through. John,
yeah.
I don't know if you heard yesterday's show, but...
I did not.
Here we go.
I asked Lance a simple question. I expected to hear, oh, maybe I could. But he went full-blown confident. I asked him, do you think he could beat you in a race?
Could Lance beat me in a race?
Arrogance answer that I got from him was so lovely. I didn't expect this.
Well,
And now that I'm waiting on the phone, you guys go at it again.
Thank you. My guess is that he told you that he would destroy me in a race.
Well, no, destroyed was not the term.
It wasn't even close.
Wow, well, wait a minute. We're gonna have to go back to the videotape for this.
Let me ask a question.
I didn't even ask about the staff. I asked about you.
Now, was it a sprint are we talking about? Are we talking like more of a long-distance run?
Here we go.
We didn't go into that detail.
No, we did not.
It was –
because I admit – I am not a long-distance runner. So if Lance might be able to run like 3 or 4 miles, you know, faster than me. But if we line up and we're running like a 40-yard dash, I will certainly take my chances and pretty good about it.
Well, I also threw out the entire staff in my statement, too.
Oh, okay.
I said I'd have confidence with pretty much the behind-the-scenes crew as well as the on-camera crew.
Colin looks like he's in decent shape. And by the way, you know, Dion in PR has been bragging that he can beat everybody in a race.
Well, you know, talk is cheap, as they would say, and myself is included. But I feel comfortable that, you know, I run here and there and, you know, play sports that I think it's much more accomplished
and
than
now,
the rest
Alan,
of the crew.
And here's the thing. What makes his comment even more absurd is that we actually play on the same basketball team together,
yes.
So he has seen me run. So,
well, I mean, we're not leaving smoke behind with
no,
the running
of course
that's
not.
Going on here. I mean,
but,
relax, you know. But, yes, I have seen you run.
Needless to say, Lance has never been short of unwarranted confidence over the course of his career. So
yes.
I am not surprised by his statement. Do you have a Giants question, by the way?
Oh,
yes,
now look
I
who's
do.
Trying
yes,
to change
I do.
The topic.
It was a
perfect notice
time
that.
In anyway, but
yes.
All right, the question I have is the CBA and the salaries for the rookies.
Okay.
Is it slotted for first round all the way to the seventh?
Yes,
it
is basically slotted, Alan, but the contracts, even though they're slotted for total value, it can change from player to player and team to team based on level of guarantees in those contracts.
Gotcha.
So when certain players like Joey Bosa, for example, held out the first four games of last year, it had to do with things like offset language if they cut them and guarantees and stuff like that. But the actual number, that is slotted up and down the draft as far as my understanding is.
Yeah, the – Alan, the rookie class, the contract is part of the salary cap, and it's already allotted so that if somebody does hold out, it's not like, oh, my God, if we go out and sign another player, now we're going to have no money left over to sign the rookie because there's an allotment that has to be put to the side to make sure you can handle your rookie contracts.
Gotcha. Thank you very much for the entertainment and
no problem.
Knowledge.
You got it, Alan. Appreciate
now,
the call.
Now, I hope you didn't claim that you could walk faster than DiTino.
Well, I really have never seen DiTino walk
really
in his 5 mile. I mean, I've seen him walk, but I haven't seen him in his, you know, whole persona
here's,
of power walking.
Well, here's the great DiTino walking moments is when you're on the road and you're eating in a restaurant, you're either outside or you're by the window, and you look outside and all you see is DiTino with his white Nikes and his, you know, khakis and his polo shirt just whipping those arms. And he gets into it. Like, you watch those speed walkers at the Olympics?
Yeah.
You know how they get, like,
of course,
the whole thing going?
Animated.
That's him.
Yeah.
He's not messing around.
Wait, but when you say you're looking out the window, meaning what? When you're eating breakfast, he purposely does it around the hotel?
No, dinner. Like when we land and we all go out to dinner on a Saturday night, and let's say we're eating near the hotel, DiTino does rounds the night before the game.
Yeah.
And Salomo makes a good point. 2 a.m., the night before the Super Bowl in Indy, DiTino couldn't sleep, obviously.
Yes.
He's too fired up. He was basically putting up a dust cloud in Indianapolis walking around that town.
I had colleagues, actually, it's funny you brought that up, who work for other entities that know how crazy DiTino is, and they came back from the Super Bowl and told me stories about I went into DiTino, and I saw he was in the midst of a power walk, and he bit and chewed my ear off for about 5 minutes and how concerned he was about the game. So, I mean, his reputation clearly precedes itself in many different walks
of life.
I'm telling you,
the one thing I like to see, and we'll get back to football in a second, I promise you. Can you imagine, like, the people that, like, own the shops and stuff in the parts of his town that he walks around? And, like, do you think they see him coming from down the block and they, like, lock the door and they put, like, the little clothes signed up? Or do you think they duck behind the counter to avoid him?
Is it that small and quaint of a town where everybody tends to know one another? You know, the way you're talking, I'm picturing Hanover, New Hampshire, because I've been up there a few times, and it's more like a movie set town where, you know, like, everybody knows each other. They wave. Right out of a movie or a TV set.
Maybe they don't know him, but they all know of him. How could you not know guy who runs, walks around the town like a lunatic trying to talk to everybody about the Giants?
I would think the residential neighborhood, the
sure.
adjoining houses, you know, like they know him. The mailman, I'm sure. Probably the mailman probably knows him better than anybody.
I'd love to know the nicknames that they've come up for him.
Have to book an interview on this program.
Yeah, it could be like the – I don't want to give the town that he lives in. It could be the Tino Town Roundtable of all, like, the shop owners telling the Tino stories.
In-depth discussion.
Let's go to Bam Bam in Rockville Center. I'm not sure everybody calls the Tino Bam Bam. What's up, Bam Bam?
John, this is your boy Bam Bam Biganos from Twitter. How you doing today,
what's
buddy?
Up, dude? How are you?
Just wanted to reach out. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
One thing I think might be being overlooked here this offseason, I want to know what you guys think about this, is we've kind of heard that when he was first signed, that Fluker was going to be competing at the right guard spot. We know John Jerry's strength as an offensive lineman is pass protection. Any scenario you see in which Fluker winds up at right guard and Jerry is the starting right tackle?
I'd be very hard to see that as Jerry as the right tackle, only because, I mean, if you look at his career with the Dolphins, he was a guard. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of tackle experience. I'd have to go back to see if he even played that in college.
And quite frankly,
has
the Giants,
versatility.
And the Giants had plenty of opportunities to put Jerry at right tackle if they wanted to the last couple of years, and they didn't do it. So I would be surprised if they moved him out of that right guard spot. And Tino seems to think that it's a really open competition there, and I'm not telling you it's not a competition, but personally, I would be surprised if somebody beat John Jerry out for that starting right guard spot, given he's been a staple there for the last 3 years.
Yeah, and Fluker's strength
I agree
is to
guys.
Block
I think
and set
Patino's
the run.
Patino's kind of being a fan of him. He thinks that the offensive line is going to, you know, looks better on paper. I don't particularly see it. My only reason for thinking that is if they're bringing in Fluker to compete at right guard, essentially they're bringing back, you know, he's been, like you said, they paid Jerry kind of indicates he's starting somewhere.
You would think.
And at that point, we're just bringing back the same offensive line, and I think we all know the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Well, you know what, Bam Bam? I'll say this, and I do think Paul is very optimistic. I don't disagree with that. I'm more of in a wait-and-see mode, and I would feel less optimistic if Eric Flowers and Bobby Orr are both 29, 30 years old, and they were veterans, and we knew what they are. I mean, there is an opportunity for younger players when they've been in the league for a couple of years to take a step and improve. Now, do I know that's going to happen? I don't. Is it a better than 50-50 chance? I hope so, but frankly, I don't know. So I really think it's a wait-and-see proposition. If those guys don't improve, the offensive line isn't going to be much different than it was last year, in my opinion. But I think you hope through internal development, coaching, these guys try to better themselves, maturity, whatever, take your pick, that there will be some level of improvement. To what level it's going to be, I have no idea. I haven't seen these guys do anything on the field. In fact, I'm not going to be able to give you my opinion on that until the second week of August, when we've seen 2 weeks of practice and training camp, and I actually see these guys block another human being, because in OTAs, you don't block anybody. So
gotcha.
I'm not going to know the answer to these questions until the middle of August. I know that's not what fans want to hear, but we're just not going to know how much better these guys are.
Well, the one thing I will say is, and I don't disagree with anything you just said, John, but I think that there's a few more options here in training camp compared
to
last year.
Fluker helps.
Well, I mean, even also, you know, what Brett Jones brought to the table last year. You have guys that have starting experience, whether it be with this team or elsewhere, that they can experiment with.
I was focusing more on the tackle position, per se.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, I'm looking across the board, because I think what Bam Bam, at least my interpretation, you're talking about the whole line. I mean, you can't just focus on one entity of the line, but if you want to just look at the tackle spot, yeah, Fluker wasn't here last year. Bobby Hart also gained additional starting experience last year, so I think he brings a little bit more to the table, so you can at least experiment. And remember, you know, we haven't seen Jerry line up with Fluker if they go right guard, right tackle with that combination. We've seen Jerry and Hart. We have yet to see Jerry and Fluker. Now, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden, magically, they're going to wake up and this is going to be a juggernaut on the right side, but sometimes when guys click and there's a better combination over the course of a few games and they stay durable, sometimes you do see some improvement in terms of the results, but
we
have to see that in a game situation and during practice before we jump to those conclusions.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call.
Before
one last thing, you still owe me a thank you for helping you out. You've had it over the summer on the website. Thanks, guys.
Well, Bam Bam, before we let you go, he hung up. I wanted to know, is this a Bam Bam Bigelow fascination? Is that how he got the name?
I think that's the reference. I think he has a big schnoz, and that's why he calls himself Bam Bam Big and Nose.
Well, no, I get that.
And his Twitter icon is just this big schnoz.
Correct, but I was referring to the wrestler. If he was passionate about Bam Bam Bigelow the wrestler, which was a wrestling character, and he's just playing off of that wrestling character, that's what I was curious about.
I would imagine.
I mean, I would assume there's got to be some connection.
Be,
well, maybe he could reach out to us on social media.
And he unfortunately passed away a few years ago, by the way.
Correct, exactly. Wow, look, I didn't think that you had wrestling.
He wore the big unitard with the flames
on. Exactly. Yes, he had the tattooed head.
Correct.
Yes, and he had Luna Vachon.
That I don't remember.
Okay, well, see, that, now I'm getting it.
That was his manager or girlfriend?
At one point, I don't know if they had a relationship. That I can't speak of, but was a manager at one point, yes.
I do remember Bam Bam.
That's old school wrestling for those of you. I have not watched wrestling in decades.
And by the way, his little comment aside there, you know, Bam Bam, I couldn't talk about this on Twitter, but I can talk about it now. When I interviewed Victor Cruz last offseason, in the interview, he made an offhand comment that, oh, it's, you know, it was right after they rehired Mike Sullivan. He made an offhand comment, oh, it's great to have Mike Sullivan back calling the plays. And we put it up with the comment in because, frankly, we didn't even catch it. And at that point, the Giants had announced who were calling the plays yet. And I think Victor just assumed it was going to be Mike Sullivan that was going to be calling the plays. So eventually we realized that, oh, you know, we probably should take that out because he probably doesn't know who's going to be calling the plays. He just assumed because since he's been with the Giants, what? The offensive coordinator is always the guy calling the plays, right? So we took it down. And Bam Bam had pointed it out on Twitter. We had already gone through the process of starting to take it down before he tweeted me. But, you know, he's like, oh, you guys are trying to hide this big secret that, you know, Victor Cruz revealed who was going to call plays. He said it was going to be Mike Sullivan. The reason we took it down and we took that part out is because Victor just assumed it was going to be Sullivan. He didn't know. We didn't know. And as it turned out, Ben McAdoo ended up calling the plays, which is really why we made the decision to take it out to begin with, because nobody knew what was actually going to happen.
That was the full explanation
That's
of
it.
What he was alluding to.
Yes, and he kept asking about it last summer on Twitter, and I couldn't really comment on it because at that point, I didn't know who the heck was going to call
it.
It
wasn't revealed. Yeah.
Correct. So, anyway, there you go, Bam Bam. There's your explanation. And always, thank you for giving us heads up if you see something that's suspect. There you go. You got your thank you. Let's go to Big down in Trenton. Big, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Lance and John?
What's up, Big? Big?
I just had to ask, you got the last caller pretty much stole my thunder. Well, I wanted to talk about O-line depth. Do you think that Biz is the same body frame as Austin Pastor or Pager? Because he's still out there and no one seems to be signing this guy. Is he that terrible that no one wants to sign him? Because I'm just wondering, why can't we bring him in on a cheap deal to see how he does at right tackle? I mean, just to try to solidify or just bring in more competition.
Clearly, Big, there isn't much interest because, you know, this offensive line market was pretty hot. There weren't a lot of names out there. For a guy to still be out there on the free agent market, people must not think much of his play, to be quite honest with you. And the Giants would probably feel better about going with a younger player that's a draft pick than signing a guy in free agency.
Yeah, but isn't he only 26 years old? I mean, I heard you say his name a few times in the early process of free agency, and I'm just wondering, is he really that bad? I think he's only 26 years old, isn't he? I thought he was only 26 or 27.
I will look that up. He was on the Ravens or the Browns?
No, the Browns.
Browns, right? All right, let me take a look at him again. I do remember talking about him briefly earlier in free agency. Now, the Browns' offensive line last year was a bit of a mess.
Major issue. They completely revamped their offensive line.
I think he did give up 8 sacks. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, just to bring in more competition, I don't know. He does remind me of Biz. I think he has the same body type, 6'5", 3'0", something. I think he's 315. But I was just thinking, you think we're done at, trying to bring in more bodies?
He was their starter at right tackle. My thought would be, you already brought in a guy like Fluker, who was a right tackle. You know, a guy that played right tackle with the Chargers last year. I think it would be a little redundant at this point if you want to bring in another guy to be a competition at right tackle when you already have Hart on the roster and you have, you know, Bisnawati now and a couple of the undrafted free agents they're going to bring in. So I imagine, depending on how rookie minicamp goes and who else they decide to bring back on the roster as offensive lineman, you know, he's still an option. He's out there. But I think they're pretty content with the current depth over there at that spot.
Okay, just one more question. Now, what's your assessment of Wheeler? Because I know he had some issues in college, and some injuries. Just I just wanted, that was my last question. What do you think about Wheeler? Because I actually think he might be able to, like, I mean, I know he has to sit on the practice squad and build up his strength and this and that, but what do you think about him? What's your true assessment of Wheeler?
I think based on what I've read in the scouting reports, I think he's got a shot to make it. He was projected, as a lot of people, simply based on his play, as a middle-round pick, but you mentioned the off-the-field stuff that had an issue with it. So I'm optimistic. I think he has a chance to stick, if not on the 53, then on the practice squad. I would not be surprised if he's in and around the team next year.
Yeah, and remember, Adam Biznavati was a sixth-round pick. I know they moved up to make a trade, but, I mean, even sixth-round picks are not guaranteed roster spots. I mean, you know, they may be in the practice squad conversation, too. So, I mean, he's going to get out there. He's going to compete. The on-the-off-the-field issues is something that jumps out. But, you know, we'll see. You have an opportunity to make a fresh start here with the Giants. But, you know, for anybody who thinks that these guys are going to come in and, you know, have a legitimate shot to start at left tackle, I would not necessarily go so far.
Thank you,
in
Big.
Terms of that.
Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate the call. I want to go back to the first part of his call. You know, I'm more confident in Hart or Flowers making a big improvement than Fluker. You know, because to me, Fluker's been in the league a while now. He's changed positions once already.
Yeah.
I think he's had two different – was Mike McCoy the coach there all 4 years he was in San Diego, or did he have one coaching change while he was there? I have to double check that.
He may. I don't recall.
Either way,
he's
been in the league in a while. I think I put more faith and confidence in Hart and Flowers being younger, making a bigger jump this year than Fluker coming out of nowhere and becoming a completely different player after being in the league 4 years. That's how I look at it.
Well, I mean, the only thing that I could see Fluker making a jump, and as I mentioned, you know, playing next to a different offensive lineman,
right.
Does that help the communication? Is he more comfortable and solidified on the right side now with what the Giants are going to ask him to do? Because as you mentioned, he did start his career on the left side, whereas, yes, I think Hart and Flowers are more in the developmental stage.
Right.
Flowers is a veteran at this point. He's just looking to prove and quiet the skeptics, you know,
Fluker,
who maybe be doubt Fluker,
right, yeah,
who may have doubted that, you know, he was a first round pick or whatever it may be. Whereas, yeah, Flowers also with the injury history that he had earlier in his career, you know, that you can argue was maybe somewhat of a stumbling block. And Hart was a late round draft pick that, you know, expectations weren't very high for Hart. He got the opportunity because there were injuries on the right side of the offensive line. But, you know, I mean, he and Flowers, to me, are still in the developmental phase. I mean, Flowers, remember, this is year three. Year three, I think, is an important year for just about every position, but specifically an offensive lineman.
Yeah, you know, if you go through the first 3 years and you're still really struggling, then people really are like, oh, boy, we got to try to find
a
replacement
for
this
guy.
Right, exactly. Let's go to Mark in New York. He's up next. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Mark. What do you got for us?
Yeah. I was just wondering, you know, there's so many things I was just spinning off of as I was sitting here listening.
Yes, sir.
That I couldn't really fathom exactly what I was going to say. But now that we're on talking about the offensive line, I was kind of curious to know, like, the man Flowers came in at 20 years old, if I'm not mistaken. How many people come into the league at 20 years? What were you doing at 20? Was you facing NFL juggernauts, defensive ends at 20 years old? I mean, just, you know, that's... The reason why I give him a pass is because he was 20 years old. He's one of the strongest dudes, if not the strongest, on our team, pound for pound.
Now, Mark, I agree with you, and I think when you talk about his rookie year, I never have high expectations for offensive linemen in their rookie year. In fact, most struggle. I think the issue you have with Flowers is that you didn't get enough improvement from year one to year two. Even though he was healthier, he didn't play any better. And I think that's where you raised the red flag a little bit, that you didn't see him take that step in his second year. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. All right, that's a weird look. You know, that's why it's always good to get a second opinion. I didn't look at it like that. That's a good analogy. How about this?
Yes, sir.
With Fluker on the team, and I can see my five, the four from last year plus Fluker, I think the running game should be improved. I think we were doing 65 to 70-ish in yards per game in the run game. Is that accurate? Am I a little off under?
You're talking about the average yardage per game last season?
I think you're probably around 80, right?
I think it was more around like 82, 83. Yeah. But, I mean, we're talking about bottom of the standings and bottom of the rankings, no matter what the totals were.
And also yards per carry.
We were dead last, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, a year ago when I called and the defense got revamped and everybody was complaining that we didn't solidify anything offensively, I jumped out and said this. I'm going to say the same thing about the offensive line now with the run game. In the defense, we went from 32nd, and I was thinking to myself, if we got up to 20, even though I want to be better than 20 in the league, that's a quantum leap. Anything better than that is past my expectation. I think we finished like top 10 or something like that. So I have nothing to say about the defensive roles. We've come a long way on defense. On offense, we did not expect to finish dead last in running the ball. With this five that we have right now, I feel like they're all maulers. He's 339 pounds playing right tackle. Not too many defensive ends are going to deal with that on the right-hand side of the O-line. I also feel like we kind of took a page out of, except we have a better defense. I kind of feel like we took a page out of Dallas's book, thinking that, hey, you know what? Everybody's coming after us in the backfield. Let's get a little mauling going, slow this down. You could probably take a little will from the defense, too, if you don't mind me saying, you know, how they impose their will on running the ball and put that weight on you and pushing you around and making you fight, and now you got a pass rush.
Well, Mark, I think your theory is fine, but I think the problem you run into is that unless Fluker beats out hard at right tackle, which I don't know if that's going to happen, you're looking at the same exact group of personnel as last year when they didn't maul people in the running game. You didn't run the ball consistently. Now, I think Paul Perkins will probably give you a little bit more than Rashad Jennings did as the full-time starter.
Absolutely, he will.
And he'll help, but I don't think you're going to have an overly physical, you know, offensive line group unless the personnel changes a little bit. You know what I mean?
Well, because your point, Mark, about defense, the jump it made from 15 to 16 is the fact that the personnel changed dramatically.
Yeah.
I think we got stuck
throwing the ball, and now that we have Marshall and Ingram, I think my original question or scenario I was going to come up with is, I think they're trying to win a game without Odell and Shepard. Like, the way I see them building this team right now, is like, if you double-team Odell and you jump on Shepard and try to make it so we can't get the ball to our go-to people, well, then we just drafted a weapon at tight end that you all got to deal with. And we have Brandon Marshall on the other side that you all got to deal with.
Mark, everything starts when a team lines up to play the Giants. Every team's defensive strategy starts with one question. How are we going to cover Odell Beckham Jr.? Are we going to try to cover him one-on-one? Are we going to put a safety over the top? Are we going to zone him up? That's where every single defensive coordinator, when they get in their meeting on Tuesday morning to discuss how they're going to play the Giants, that's the first thing they talk about. And you're right. The additions of Marshall and Ingram have just made those conversations a lot more difficult to have, because I think the last year or so, it was easy to say, put a man over the top, challenge anybody else to beat us, and it was hard for them to do it. It's going to be a lot more difficult to do that this year, like you said, with Ingram and Marshall being in the mix.
But with that being said, the importance of the run is still also big.
Add Perkins in that circumference also, because he's going to come out of the backfield and cause mismatches for –
Well, and that's exactly
what
I was hitting on, and appreciate the call, because the reason why they were able to keep the safeties back last season is because they were daring the Giants to run, and they wanted to have a reason to bring the safety up, and the Giants didn't consistently give them a reason to bring the safety up. So I agree that I think the guys they brought in can help work the middle of the field, but you still want to tease the defense and give them a reason to step up because of the running game.
Absolutely right. And in the end, and I said this last year a million times on the show with you, the easiest way to get teams that are having safeties deep is by running the football. It fixes everything. Now, I don't know for sure the Giants can do that yet. They're going to have to show it to me, because they haven't been able to do it the last couple of years. I think Perkins makes a big difference. Maybe Hart and Flowers takes a big step. Maybe Richburg plays better this year after, you know, dealing with a hand injury last year and things of that nature. Maybe all those things come together and they do run the ball better. But I agree. That's the easiest way to fix things, is to have a balanced offense and to challenge people with your running game. If they do that, you're going to be in great shape offensively.
And I would agree with the point that the last caller brought up, that if you read between the lines and you look at some of the offensive linemen that were brought in, you know, they look more like maulers because of their size and their strength to maybe set the edges with the run.
And Fluker is.
Certainly. I mean, look at the size of him. My goodness, he's a presence. But let's not also assume that just because you're a mauler – that defensive ends, opposing DEs, are going to have trouble getting the pass rush going. Because remember, sometimes guys who are maulers, it's about the footwork, John. And when you're dealing with defensive ends that are more finesse and they're quick and they got a quick first step, that's where some of these maulers struggle. You know, it's something that obviously Ereck Flowers has had to deal with early in his career. You could have a presence. You could be able to set the edge on the run, but can you handle shifty guys off the edge? That's the challenge that I think a lot of young offensive tackles have to deal with.
That's why it's hard to find guys that can do both.
Absolutely. Very hard to find balance, and that's the goal of every single team. I mean, you want to be that offensive line that is not just nasty in the trenches, but also can handle, you know, the bull rush from the defensive ends, and sometimes you have to pick and choose whichever one of your strengths is.
It's great to be nasty and running the football, but if you're a third and eight, and then you're mauler, you know, basically somebody does ring around the rosy on the defensive end, and your quarterback gets plastered. Being a mauler isn't all that useful.
Exactly, and that also gets back to the point, I know we want to get to callers, which we bring up a lot of times, you know, people want to move Ereck Flowers to the right, but most teams have these quick defensive ends on both sides.
Can't hide offensive tackles.
Yeah, you can't hide the maulers. It doesn't make any sense.
Inside, obviously, it's different. You're not dealing with fast edge rushers, why ideally a guard, you do want guys that can put their hands on somebody and move the line.
Yeah, but before you try to hide a tackle at guard, he's got to be capable of playing guard. You can't just say, well, we want to have him as one of our best five offensive linemen. He may not have the physical attributes.
My only point is that you don't need as good a feet to play guard because you're in more of a confined space than you are a tackle when you're on the edge and you have all that ground you got to cover.
You're insulated more.
Yeah. Exactly. And you have help on either side of you with the center and the tackle. Yep. Let's go to Jay in England. He's up next from overseas. What's up, Jay?
Hey, guys, I'm going to make this real quick, take it offline, because in about a couple minutes, some F-15 is about to take off.
Okay.
Nobody's hearing nobody when that happens.
Go ahead.
So, Darren Thompson, Liz Frank injury. Why did we not draft a safety in the draft or bring in a safety knowing that he had that injury? And also, with the tender to LeGarrette Blount, how does that affect the Giants either picking him up or putting in a bid to get his services, and where does that put us in getting him later on down the line, whatever. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hey, right, thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. And duck your head for that at 15.
Yeah, boy.
Obviously, Dave is serving our country overseas.
We do appreciate that,
obviously. The Blount tender, I mean, it's just a matter of you have to, you know, probably go a little bit more out of pocket in order to get him to come over. And then that pick and that signing would go into the compensatory pick formula when they do that calculation next year.
Yeah, the only other thing that I will add to what you just said is, John, there's now a deadline, July 20th.
Good point.
And when July 20th comes, then he can only return to the Patriots. That's it.
For the first, what, 6 or 8 weeks of the year? And then I think at midseason, doesn't it go away
or something
exactly like
that? I'm not exactly sure of that deadline. But what I'm saying is the window now has dramatically changed. Because
good point.
If you're thinking, well, you know, maybe we'll wait till right before training camp to bring him in. And not every training camp starts July 20th. Most of them start the latter part of July, early August, based on when your first preseason game is. So now the window shrinks, which means the urgency, if you really want him, you got to bring him in. But now you have to be willing to lose something in return because of the tender that the Patriots put out there. So I think it changes the equation in terms of the rationale. You're not just competing with yourself to bring in LeGarrette Blount, you're now competing with the Patriots because they have protected themselves in the event that they lose Blount.
And by the way, the Giants were 29th in rushing last year, not 32nd. 88.3 yards per game, 1,412 yards over the course of the year, 3.5 yards per carry, pardon me. Let's go to wow, we got three all-star callers to close up the show. We got Shakes, Len, and Charlie. Back to back to back. You guys have a combined 11 minutes. I suggest you use the best of it. Shakes, you will lead us off, my friend.
I was going to say with that third name on the list, All-Stars used very loosely. But anyway, let's head back to Shakes here.
Yeah. Here's my thing. And you said Charlie is on the air. And one of my problems with Charlie in this assumption, because a lot of times me and Charlie are on the same page. That's my boy. That's my partner. But I don't like how him and a few other Giant fans condemn Ereck Flowers as not being he's not a left tackle. The kid is only 22 years old.
It's the jury is still out.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like he's 28, 27, where you like, this is what he is. He's Marshall Newhouse when he came in. We knew who he was.
Yep. Agree.
Ereck Flowers can develop into whatever we want. And then his problems is not lacking power. It's not Marlon. That's not his lacks. His lacks is technique. And we all know that can be coached and that can be learned with experience. So all that condemning Eric Flowers, oh, he's not a left tackle, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. It needs to stop. It needs to stop. Now, last week, me and you, we was talking, and I was going down some things of why I didn't like the draft picks, and I told you I was going to call back and explain why I didn't like the Ingram
pick. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Now, let me get this out the way. I think he's going to be an incredible, incredible talent. I think he's going to be a great weapon for the New York Football Giants. That is not my beef.
Okay.
My beef is this. The style of tight end I feel that the Giants should go for is the dual tight end, the complete tight end, not the one-dimensional, not the one that you just got to throw out in the slot. To me, I call them slot ends. That's what they are. They're not tight ends. They're slot ends. The Ingrams of the world, the Jimmy Grahams of the world, all of them, they are slot ends.
Okay.
Now, you might as well have just grabbed up a wide receiver. That's my whole thing. Because now if you want to get physical and you want to block, you're going to have to possibly put out three fullbacks on the field. Him at slot and two fullbacks, maybe you take one and throw him as the H-back or fullback or whatever the case may be. But some plays, you're going to have three tight ends out there. And that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous that we're going to pigeon-toe ourselves into one-dimensional tight ends. And I know it's a lot of y'all that love the Ingram pick. And don't get me wrong. He's going to be great. But still, that is my beef. I don't like the one-dimensional tight end. I don't like the slot-end thing.
Shakes, I hear you. I hear you, and I understand your point. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of three tight end formations out there this year. I think you're going to see – I think you see more 12 personnel with Ingram and then maybe Red Ellison out there with the running back in early down situations. But I don't think you're going to see situations where, you know, you're dealing with three tight ends on the field or two tight ends and a fullback. Like, I don't think you're going to see Ingram, Will Ty, and Red Ellison and Paul Perkins all in the game at the same time. I don't think that's going to happen much.
Well, and the other thing that I wanted to add, Shakes, is, and if you look at Ingram, I mean, he is very similar to a wide receiver based on how Ole Miss utilized him. But, you know, let's see what he does and what the Giants ask for him as a blocker, because I've seen on film, I think he's got the potential to get physical. And I'll use an example. Paul Perkins, when he came in, he was not asked to pass protect much out of college. And then all of a sudden, you go to the Browns game later in the season, and he took on a linebacker off a blitz up the middle, and he protected Eli Manning.
Now remember, though, Ingram is going to be limited in his blocking effectiveness by his size. He's
no
just
doubt.
Going to
well,
be.
That's what I said, but right. I want to just, before we label guys and assume that there's no potential and he's only going to be a slot guy and you're going to have Red Ellison in, let's at least just see what the Giants ask him to do. That's all I'm saying. And I get your point, Shakes, that in an ideal world you want the dual tight end, because you also want defenses to think, we're going to run the football.
Right.
And just because the tight end's in,
and
that means
that.
And that's why I understand where Shakes is coming from. But I just think that let's see how Ingram's utilized before we all of a sudden classify him as strictly a slot wide receiver. I think that they're obviously going to ask him to do more than that, because you have to be able to do that in order to solidify a roster spot and be dressing every week, special teams and some of those other things. That involves blocking and being physical.
I got you. Let me just take this off on this note, though.
Sure.
I wasn't saying that we're going to be doing three tight ends majority of the time. I just think that it's going to be some plays where we will possibly have three tight ends. And according to Ans and the Steffies of the world, they don't even want Ty on the field. They don't even want him on the team no more. But what I was thinking was you have Ellison and last year's pick.
Jarrell Adams, you're talking about.
The Adams, yeah. Adams. Adams be out there, and then you got Ingram out there in the slot. I think that's a formation that we'll probably see. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you possibly got to do three tight ends too if you want to be a little physical when you got him as a slot end. But thanks for taking my call, y'all.
Hey,
I appreciate
you. Shakes, thanks for calling back. Always appreciate it. And the other thing too, you can't classify him completely as a wide receiver, because when you bring him in the game, teams still view him as a guy that can block a little bit. And he was asked to block a little bit at Ole Miss. So you have a chance to get him in some matchups on, you know, safeties or linebackers in some situations. When a receiver, he's always going to be dealing with a cornerback more often than not. So that can give you some advantageous situations, which is why having a tight end that can catch gives you some good matchup possibilities that the Giants can take advantage of it. Len in Maryland's up next. Hi, Len.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Listen, John and Lance, the last time I was labeled in Oslar was my last year in Little League, and that was a long time ago, but thank you very much. That brought back a lot of memories.
Well, listen, everybody gets a participation trophy now, so don't you worry, Len.
There you go, there you go. Lance, I knew you were second-guessing John on that Oslar.
Well, listen, that's why I'm here, yeah. But Charlie's the guy that we're really going to give it to.
One that Charlie may get a kick out of. This one relates to Bam Bam. I'm surprised you guys didn't bring this up. Well, maybe you're not old enough. 25, 30 years ago, the Yankees had a young third baseman. Had a cup of coffee in the majors whose whole name was Hensley Mullins.
Oh, Bam Bam Mullins, of course.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go.
He's now the hitting coach for the San Francisco Giants, by the way.
He's a hitting coach, a highly respected hitting coach for the for the Giants. I first saw Bam Bam in the minor leagues. I was a season ticket holder for a single-A baseball team in Virginia.
Nice.
That was a Yankee affiliate. And the big star, that I saw Rivera come up. God, it was a great period to be, to see minor league baseball with a Yankees affiliate. But Mullins, for a couple of years down there, was a big star. I caught him in Bradenton, Florida, 20 years later, and I yelled at a preseason game, and I yelled to him from the stands, "Hey, Bam Bam!" He nearly jumped out of his uniform when he heard his nickname, his early day nickname, screamed out at him from the stands.
Nice.
And I had a nice conversation with him that day. A pretty good guy. Listen, second factoid: I'd be surprised if Charlie doesn't know this, but since he's coming on next, maybe we want to ask him. Does he remember the last time, it turns out to be the only time, the Giants played a game in the state of Maine?
Wow.
I will ask
really
him that.
Back.
Now, unfortunately, you're giving me some time to, like, get on the internet here.
Exactly.
The problem, though, he's in Maine, so he might still have dial-up out there. So he might have to go the...
Yeah, ancient
times. It might
take
a little while.
It is neck of the woods.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. And if you Google that, it's a great story.
Okay.
A really great story. Listen, it was nice to hear you say that Beckham is the one guy. The other teams get in the room on Thursday morning. The defensive coordinators, they want to, you know, they're going to plan for Beckham.
Of course.
Which would lead me to believe I don't want Beckham to come off the field at all.
Ah, he's not going to come off the field much. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Well, I do hope that is indeed correct. I wanted to talk a little bit about the defense. Let me finish on Beckham. I don't know that we've had many players over the years that, on a Tuesday morning, offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator get in the room and say, how are we going to control this guy?
I would say Burris.
I guess Lawrence Taylor was one,
and
probably
Burris.
Eli falls into that category.
And Plaxico Burress, I would say, too. In the 2007-08 years, I think Burress was a guy that teams had to really pay attention to.
Okay. But not to the extent, John.
No.
Not to the extent that guys like Beckham and LT. And,
I agree.
And maybe even Eli. Hey, a little bit on the defense. Let me just quickly start with the defensive backfield. And if it goes on for too long, then, you know, we'll turn to Charlie. Cornerback. Fourth cornerback. We picked up what we didn't re-sign Sensabaugh, or maybe he just took. Maybe we tried to. He took a contract from the Steelers.
And Leon McFadden
contract,
went to Dallas,
which may be the reason why he opted to go to the Steelers. Although I'm not real sure that after that playoff game against the Packers, we had any interest in bringing Trevon Wade and Cody Sensabaugh back and Bobby Rainey back. They just made glaring errors in that second half that you just say to yourself, I don't know if I want these guys back on the roster. But who is the fourth cornerback? I know we signed a guy.
Yeah, they signed Valentino Blake, who actually was a former Steeler himself. He was with Tennessee last year, mainly a special teams guy. But when he was with Pittsburgh, if you go back, I mean, he was one of their main corners. So he has experience. I mean, that's the guy from a veteran standpoint that I would classify as the fourth guy.
Yes, I would think that he would. I would think that he would be the fourth guy. Now, if we move back to the, and I don't know, we may be looking for some undrafted free agent, maybe somebody that gets cut loose in training camp. If we start looking at a number five at the cornerback spot, if you move back to safety, what do we know about Mikal Thompson? Health-wise, do we expect, and when do we see these guys possibly run? Like, when will we see Darian Thompson?
Well, Darian Thompson will be out there in OTAs, which start, I believe, a week and change from now, if I'm not mistaken. I believe they start the last week of May. So we'll see exactly where all those guys are health-wise, Len, when OTAs start at the end of May.
But also keep in mind, with that being said, Len, you know, they tend to, all teams do this, they may not want to overdo it
They'll
with some of these guys.
Right.
So, I mean, you can only tell so much. My point is how much they're involved in OTAs, which is limited as it is. So I would not read into it too much. Oh, I'm nervous. He's been on the sidelines a little too long. He's working on the side with trainers. Training camp's going to be the true test. If you're delayed at the start of training camp, maybe is a red flag. Uh-oh, maybe there was a setback. Anything in OTAs I would not read into so much.
Right. Okay, well, I would think they would wait a long, long time on Darian Thompson. Maybe even if things weren't right and we got to training camp, maybe it's preseason pup. They give him an extra 4 or 5 weeks. And see how things work out.
That may be pushing
it a little,
I'm
not so sure that Mikal Thompson gets that much time to, show that he might be able to play a little bit. I wondered about that draft pick when it was made. I just thought, wow, I don't get it.
About
the kid
Thompson.
Comes back from the injury and proves me wrong, but I never got that pick, guys.
Well, here's the one thing I will say about
Len,
Thompson.
Thanks for the call. We got to run, man. We're past one.
Okay.
Thank you.
One thing I wanted to add about Thompson is, and Len's right, he has to prove, like some other players, that he's durable and he can stay on the field. I completely agree with that. But the appeal with Thompson is, especially when you're starting to think about who's the fourth or the fifth corner, if you look at how Texas utilized him, he was a slot corner, and he was a safety. So there's versatility there that maybe they can move him around, which they did in the short period of time when he was healthy. I don't know why you're smirking at me. Okay.
That's it. I was just waiting for you to finish.
Okay.
That's
it. Now, here we go. This is what we're waiting for.
About this.
Boy.
Hallelujah.
This is what interrupted me.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in that.
I tell you, we give him too much credit on this
happy.
Program. That's all I'm going to say.
Here we go.
What's up, Chuckles? Now,
I saw you
yesterday on Twitter posting some pictures to me and Lance about, like, you being the Joker. And by the way, there is a Joker reference in that open, which makes it even more appropriate.
Oh, really? But is it from that actual Batman movie?
It is not the Jack Nicholson Joker.
So,
it's the Heath Ledger Joker.
All right. Well, there you go. It's a little different.
Hey,
he was referring to Jack Nicholson.
I understand.
And by the way, I responded to him, too, by the way.
I know.
I thought my picture was better, but that was all.
Hey, I actually see Bam Bam on the Cartoon Channel, so... That's I know.
Hey, you know, Charlie, you know, it's funny. Paul Dettino always talks about Fred Flintstone football. Bam, bam,
bam
big
bam,
nose would have fit right in. Absolutely.
Hey, and following the oracles of Maryland is an honor and a privilege. I just want to shout out to Len. And
throwing
take.
Out some big words at the end
I
of the
like
program.
I like it. The Oracle of Maryland. That's pretty good. I
See,
like that.
He had time to look up in his dictionary while he was on hold. Let me show my creativity here.
Oracle's pretty good.
Lance. Yeah. Hey, Lance, actually the date is July 22nd for Blunt, and he's only going to get $1 million
Correct.
So he's got incentive to sign now, is to sign quick. And the
Well, he has incentive, Charlie, but the question is, does the team that wants to sign him have the incentive?
We do. Like,
well, but remember,
example,
you have to give up a little, too, with the calculations of the compensatory picks.
Yeah.
Remember, that's
what
changed
we're
the equation.
Up, we're not going to give up a pick. We're going to pick. We're going to maybe lose a slot. In other words, we have a fourth-round pick for Hanks. We might end up with a 5 or a 6.
Correct. It changes the mathematical formula. Yeah.
Right, but we don't lose it.
Well,
but it's something you have
is,
to weigh, at least.
And remember, no one really knows how the compensatory pick formula works. It also depends on how well these guys play and where they go.
Charlie
you know, if Hankins, for example, goes somewhere, gets hurt, and doesn't play a game this year, the Giants aren't necessarily going to get a big-time compensatory pick for him. So it all really depends on, you know, how these guys play this year in addition to the type of contract they sign.
But Charlie already penciled him in as a fourth, and it doesn't matter whether Hankins gets hurt because, according to his sources, he's already worked out the kinks.
Wow,
it's like you're trying to convince him. He's then going to find a way to counter it and come back.
There's so much animosity between the two of you. What happened on this phone call yesterday?
Just some friendly banter. Friendly banter.
You know, when I think of Paul, like, doing a power walk, he's like the Tasmanian devil.
Yeah,
that's what he reminds me of,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Lance is like the roadrunner, his feet going a million miles an hour, and, you know, running down the road.
I'm not offended by that comparison. That's fair.
But
I'll take the roadrunner.
I was thinking more Elmore Fudd for Lance.
Well,
but
I thought
he
was
going to
go maybe the Wild Coyote or something like that.
Now,
but, you know.
Now you aren't that smart. It's okay.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll drink to that.
Hey, I just want to say something about, you know, the last caller or a couple calls ago, not Shakes or Len, was talking about how we fixed our defensive, line and how we got better, so much better. The reason why is we went out and got quality players and we paid money.
That's true.
We got veterans that were top quality.
No
what
argument.
Did we do on the offensive line? We picked up Fluker, who was a failure in San Diego. And that's all we've done.
Well,
so
Charlie, that was the point. That was the point I made to him, and that the personnel right now is the same. So, barring internal improvement from young players, which I'm not—I know you're not very optimistic about. I'm not saying I'm super optimistic like Paul might be. I'm more realistic about it. I'm in a wait and see mode. But I don't think it's fair to say it's impossible that Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers both significantly improved this year, and the offensive line could get better that way. Now, are they going to become the best offensive line in football? No, probably not. I'd have to be very surprised by that. But I don't think even you would rule out. I don't think even you would rule out that there's a chance that those two players improve, and that does make the overall unit, you know, play a little bit better next year. It is possible now.
Right, but why can't we wait for the possibility with Flowers on the right side and maybe he's going to wake up instead of keep him on the left side on Eli's blind side?
Because there weren't any good left tackles available, Charlie.
Who are you putting on the left? All right, Charlie, even if we play the game a hypothetical, okay, so you move him to the right and you toy with that during OTAs and training camp, fine.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's crazy. Who are you now putting on the left side, though? You have to
I'm bringing in Clady. I'm bringing in Dunlap.
But see, I'm talking about current. No, see, Charlie, you always throw the curveball in this game. Okay, the game. No. If we're gonna play the game, I'm talking about somebody on the roster right now.
Oh, on the roster right
yes,
now.
Yes, on the roster right now. Not somebody who you're bringing in your head. On the roster right now. Who are you putting on the left side? You have to think about that.
I put Pugh over there.
So you're going to take – so now you're changing – okay, so now you got the hole at left guard. So we're playing musical chairs again.
No, we don't have a hole there. We've got some guys
No, but the point is that – so you're moving Pugh. Now you got to fill left guard. Do you understand? You're instead of just making one simple switch, you now want to change – remember, Pugh's now worked with Richburg.
No, I take Fluker and put him at left guard. You have Richburg. You have Pugh. You have Jerry. And then on right tackle, you have Flowers. What's the big change?
Well, like I said, you're mixing and matching guys that have already played next to one another. And Pugh was on the record last year, and I've said this before, where he says the reason why he felt that there was consistency, unfortunately got hurt, was because he finally knew going into that season they weren't going to move him around. He was comfortable at left guard. I don't know if they want to now take him out again and move him out of his comfort zone. You have to take that into consideration.
I just read an article that Pugh was talking about. He said he'd be willing to do tackle. And
well, I'm sure he's willing to do it.
That doesn't mean it's a good idea.
I mean, listen, Pugh, most of these guys on the team will say they'll do anything possible to help this team win. And I think Pugh has been on the record saying that. My point is, though, he made it clear to the media. He said, they walked me into the season saying, we want you to be our left guard. That's where your focus is in. And he said that changed his mindset as a player and helped as well.
Well, basically what I'm saying is you please try it. In you know, the OTAs, you try it in summer camp, you try it so you get the best five players out there in the best positions. I don't think Flowers is one of the best five offensive linemen on this team, even with what we have now. I think he's the sixth, maybe a seventh, but he's not the best five. So I would play around. If you're not going to bring in a veteran left tackle, which I think they have to and they need to, but they won't probably, then you've got to play around with the line and get the best player at left tackle. And the best player on our team, the best offensive lineman we have, is Pugh.
Hey, Charlie, real quick, And yeah. we've been through this a million times, so I don't want to get back on the subject. But a couple of people sent me Twitter messages, and one specifically from your boy Roldy. He says he's tired of your negativity, and he doesn't know what you're talking about, and you need to shut up already.
Wow. Roldy always says that.
I know he does.
He doesn't understand English
Charlie,
well, I don't think.
To get but, back – yeah. Well I was going to say is before we let you go – okay, yeah, and I'll let you continue. Do you have the answer that Len threw out? No, I mean, that's what we should have let off
with. I don't know the exact date, but it was in the early 60s or late 50s. They did come to Maine. It was in the Sam Huff era, I believe.
Do you remember who they played?
No, maybe the Lions, but I am not sure. I was there. I was a water boy for the team, and I actually gave the towel.
This sounds too good to be true.
Wiped the blood off his face.
Is there sarcasm? Are you being sarcastic?
That's not true.
Listen, I'm usually good at sensing sarcasm, and I feel like that is a heavy dose of that. You were very good on your delivery. Definitely sarcasm.
Charlie, we got to run, man.
No doubt about it.
Okay, guys.
By the way, here's the answer to the trivia question, and I didn't know this, by the way.
Oh, man.
I didn't know this. So, Glenn, excellent trivia question.
So smooth.
I know, he's very good.
Oh, boy, that was good. He went up a few points in my book on that one.
So, in September of 1959, the Giants played the Green Bay Packers in an exhibition game in Bangor, Maine.
Yeah.
It was the first game ever for Vince Lombardi as the head coach of the Packers. It was also the only time that he was ever shut out as a head coach of the Packers, losing to the Giants 14-0. A couple other notes.
Look, we got quotes from Pat Summerall.
Dan Salmon got a lot of good stuff here. 13,000 people at Garland Street Field. Apparently, Pat Summerall caught a pass in that game, who was the Giants' kicker. Couple other notes. It was the easternmost game ever played in the United States in the NFL. So I thought that was interesting. Only time Maine has ever hosted a game. And, again, it was the only time Vince Lombardi was ever shut out as a head coach. A total of 15 future Hall of Fame members played some role in the game.
It's a nice nugget.
Rosie Brown, Frank Gifford, Sam Huff, Andy Robustelli, owner Tim Mara, Don Maynard suiting up for the Giants, Forrest Gregg, Paul Hornung, Henry Jordan, Ray Nitschke, Jim Ringo, Bart Starr, Jim Taylor, Emlyn Tunnell, who was playing with the Packers after being a member of the Giants the previous year, and, of course, Vince Lombardi. Wow. That's some good nuggets, Dan Salmon. I think you should write a whole story about this for Giants.com. This is fascinating.
It is. Yeah.
The main game.
And we have to give Len credit for sparking the dialogue.
Yeah.
Little nugget.
The Oracle of Maryland.
Yeah. The Oracle of Maryland. See, he now needs his own intro music. You see, he opened up Pandora's box.
It'll just be a lot of crickets and, like, bird noises.
We could throw some historical.
Some snores, maybe?
Yeah,
there.
Sorry. Right now, really digging it.
You know, I'm just teasing. All right, everybody. Great job with the show. Thank you very much. He's Lance Medow. I'm John Schmelk. Again, rookie minicamp practice begins tomorrow. We'll have coverage right here on Giants.com. It'll be me and Jeff Fiegels at noon on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And, let me check that. 1 o'clock on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Media availabilities are from 12 to 1. So we'll have a special 1 o'clock start time tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
Have a good one.